Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 18-month-old Angie was crying. She had dropped her cup of juice and it made a wide puddle on the floor. Marvella, sitting nearby, got up, quietly mopped up the spill, and replaced the juice in Angie's cup. When 8-month-old Benji's blanket got caught in the door jamb, Marvella retrieved it without a word and went back to sit in her chair. Marvella is an aide in a highly regarded daycare center. Parents pay top dollar to have their children in this clean, efficient facility. But from a parent's perspective, what else do children need? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we are fortunate to have with us two renowned experts on children's needs. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan are the authors of a new book, The Irreducible Needs of Children, What Every Child Must Have to Grow, Learn, and Flourish. But each is world famous in his own right. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, pediatrician and parent advocate, is clinical professor of pediatrics emeritus at Harvard Medical School and professor of psychiatry and human development at Brown University. In 1972, he established the Child Development Unit, a pediatric training and research center at Children's Hospital in Boston, where he continues his clinical, teaching, and research activities. In 1993, he founded the Touch Points Project, a preventive outreach program which trains professionals nationwide to better serve families of infants and toddlers. Because of his concern for the stresses families face, he has appeared before congressional committees in support of parental and medical leave bills. Dr. Brazelton has also written a number of other books, including Infants and Mothers, Crisis and Caring, and Touch Points. He is the father of 4 grown children and grandfather of 6. We are glad you could join us.
Oh, it's fun to be with you, Linda.
Thanks.
To hear you, Sandy.
Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, noted psychiatrist, is clinical professor of psychiatry, behavioral science, and pediatrics at George Washington University Medical School and a practicing child psychiatrist. Founder of 0-3, National Center for Infants, Toddlers, and Families, Dr. Greenspan is also former director of the National Institute of Mental Health's Clinical Infant Development Program and Mental Health Study Center. He has been a presidential advisor on child care and has also testified before Congress on behalf of family issues, including developmental and learning disorders. Dr. Greenspan has also written and edited many books, which include Playground Politics, The Challenging Child, and Building Healthy Minds. He's a regular guest on national television programs. We're so glad to have you with us, Dr. Greenspan.
Nice to be here with you.
What should young parents today know about daycare?
All the research shows that most of daycare is not of high quality. And for infants and toddlers, 90% is considered not of high quality. For children in general, 85% is not considered of high quality. Now, some people then turn that around and say, well, but average quality is good enough. It's not going to damage you because, you know, your parents are most important. So they're asking people to defy logic. A child is spending 40 hours a week in not such a good setting, and it's expected, well, probably won't hurt as long as the parents are good parents in the, for a couple hours in the evening. That just doesn't make sense. We don't have any research to say that that's what will happen long term. The point is, we don't know what will happen long term. We haven't done any studies on kids who've been growing up 40 hours a week in non-high quality daycare. So until we have research, which may never happen, or maybe 30 years from now or 40 years from now, I think we've got to make some wise decisions. The first wise decision is a public education campaign where all parents learn that if you can provide high-quality care yourself, then you should try very hard to spend as much time as possible, particularly during the infant, toddler, and preschool years, you know, with your babies and preschoolers. If you spend half time in there and someone else's care for half time, that's very different. They still get enough of you. And even if that other care is just clean and safe but not very nurturing, they can probably make do with that. When we examine the interactions very closely, we're asking a caregiver to care for 4 babies. Well, it's very hard to have those long nurturing interactions we're talking about in that kind of a context. In addition, caregivers change over. They leave to find better jobs. And the babies change at the end of 1 year to go from the infant room to the toddler room, and then again from the toddler room to the preschool room. So you're changing a mothering figure or a fathering figure who's with you 35, 40 hours a week. Nobody who's worked in this field would design this. We've got to provide good information. And this has to be viewed, in my view, as a major public health issue. And the lack of providing good information, and in fact providing weak information, I think, is a major public health calamity.
Well, this is where I have to differ with Stan, because I do have three militant daughters who won't listen to this kind of argument. And they say that hanging on to that argument is like being in the last century. So they say, Dad, get with it. So I've had to rethink that kind of position, which I certainly, I guess, still have as a bias, to what can we do about it? Because most people really don't have a choice about whether they leave their child with somebody else or not. And I've seen women start grieving in pregnancy about having to leave their baby within the next few months. We could improve childcare if we put our minds to it and our money to it, to give status and decent jobs to these people that are invested in our children, and then give them enough backing and enough information so they could do a decent job by children. I think kids have a lot to learn in a peer group that we could foster. And then if we can also see to it that parents who are under the gun and can't help it can come home and spend hanging out time with their children and then take their children in the kitchen to help them. I think we could make up for a lot of the separation that is going on between parents and children. We have not done it, and we are in terrible, terrible shape. And I think our kids are paying a price for it. I think our adults are too. And I don't think as a society we can afford it any longer. So we've got some real work to do in order to make it possible for people to do what I'd like to see them do, which is be at home as much as they could with their children. And then we do know from the research that's come through on childcare that half-time childcare is nowhere near as devastating as full-time is for either the child or the parent. So I'd like to see half-time childcare available and half-time working. We hope this book would push people to, you know, really think about it. Hey, what are we doing? Can we do this? And then we've got to really make childcare a priority in this country.
In a sense, people have to feel a little uneasy and guilty to create change. It doesn't come if we're going to make it too easy and make it too comfortable, particularly if that's distorting the facts as we know it. So I think where Barry and I differ a little bit, I think we've got to yell from the rooftops and be a little more vocal about it. And Barry is saying, well, I got these three daughters.
I'm going to sick all three of them right here.
It's funny. You know, my oldest child is 29 years old, and I remember telling my mother when I was pregnant, well, I'm certainly not going to stay home to raise my child. I'm needed in the classroom. I'm a teacher in a high school, and they need me, and I'm going back. And then he was born. Okay, this 29-year-old, and I couldn't leave him. And so we had a big discussion in our household about how we could live on my husband's salary. We certainly, there were things that we couldn't do without mine, but we could live. And that was fine. And I've never been sorry. I was able to do that when all of my children were young. I have three. And now they're grown men. And I'm so glad I did that. But not everyone is in that position where they can say, well, yeah, we can still pay the rent and we can still eat if I don't go back to work.
Well, here's the paradox. If everyone in that position made the kind of choice you're making or spent more time with their babies, then there would be less babies in need of daycare. And then if there were federal and state subsidies, it would be more useful because it would be applied to a fewer numbers of children. And then we could really improve care for those fewer numbers who absolutely needed to be in child care. So we'd have a better chance of being successful in making the improvements, which require better financing. If we want one caregiver for two babies rather than four babies, that's going to cost a lot more. So I think if we reduce the numbers, we'd be in much better shape. How do we balance it? How do we work and provide child care? Well, that's, as Barry was saying, much, much more difficult. But that's the new challenge, I think, of where society has come. And I think it's a welcome challenge because it's a higher level. It's a conscious choice level rather than a rote role level.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about what every child needs.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, authors of The Irreducible Needs of Children, about what every child needs to have. One of the problems I think parents tend to face is when you're in a certain kind of profession where you can't take off time, you lose whatever you lose. You lose seniority, you lose
professional licensing, whatever it is.
And I think that's one problem that women are facing. They are now in jobs where they really can't take off, and that's a huge problem.
I guess what Stan and I are both fighting for is children had better come first.
Mm. That's what we fight for, too. That's what the purpose of this show is. In terms of nurturance, what kinds of problems arise in separated or divorced families?
Well, you know, one of my daughters had this nightmarish divorce, and so I got very involved in it and looked at Judith Wallerstein's wonderful research. She says that all of these children 25 years later said they never had a childhood, that they had to take care of their parents, and that so they never were children. And I think this is true, that we're asking a lot of kids who go through a divorce, both on the whole question of abandonment, if one parent will abandon me, will the other one, and also the kind of thinking that children have, which is, did I cause this? Was this my fault? If I'd been a better child, would I have kept them together? So these are two of the major demands that are internal to the child. At present, our system to support children is completely inadequate, and we've got to rethink it because it's aimed at adult behavior, including both adults, so that the child has two parents and so forth, both of which are important, but on the other hand, the child had better come first, and I think that we have not made that possible yet for parents who are divorcing to think that the child really has rights and ought to be the one at the center of the storm and not somebody who's just being tossed from one parent to the other in the process. So I think we've got a lot of work to do. And the judges in family courts now are very aware of this. This is what's so exciting. We are finding mm-hmm. solutions when we ask for them. They want to do right by the child now. They just need a lot of support.
Just to amplify or add on to what Barry was saying, one of the issues is to ask the parents to get together and work together to meet these basic needs, these irreducible needs of the kids. For example, where it's possible, if parents can live close within a few blocks within biking distance, the kids can then have a lot of access to both parents and go to one house in the afternoon if they have a playmate who lives near that house, and then go to the other house for dinner and, you know, and homework and sleeping. And it doesn't have to be every other weekend with one parent, which makes them feel a tremendous sense of loss. So where the kids have more control over who they see and can have almost daily access to both parents. What I tell the parents is, if there's no way to work this out, and I always try to help them work it out first, but where they must part, let's see if we can create as much access to you guys as possible so you each have a wonderful relationship and it's as close as it was before, as it can be under the circumstances, which is never going to be quite the same. The kids will have guilt and they'll be worried about, but if they can have that daily access or almost daily access to both parents, I find the kids do a lot better. And so it's when the parents are 10 miles apart or in different cities, it's much harder on the kids.
I heard an adorable story last night, just a brief aside about television. I was at my cousin's house, and they have three children, and the 8-year-old came running over to his mother. Guess what? Guess what? Antique Roadshow just went on. And then he ran in the other room, and I said, Antique Roadshow? He's 8 years old. She said, we don't allow anything but public television, so he doesn't know any other options.
That's why he wants to start collecting antiques.
I know.
That's great.
Well, we never had television. When our children were growing up, we just abolished it, and everybody said, oh, but they'll go next door to watch. I said, great, that's good. They'll have to watch with some other people.
We have a problem in our house because we are probably the only family within a, 10-mile radius who doesn't have cable TV. And my youngest is a real soccer fan. He's a soccer player, and he's a soccer fan, and this is really putting a real problem in his life. And of course, our plan is to get cable TV as soon as he leaves for college.
But you're also missing my show.
Oh, darn. Well, that's different then.
Well, I have a show that I've been working on now for about 16 years, and now it's changed its name to Brazelton on Parenting. It's on Fox Family every day at noon. And it's probably the best thing I ever did. I could have written books, papers about research, taught, all that. But, you know, I walked down the street, and the people that come up and thank me for it are mostly fathers. And I can't believe it. I never could have reached the public the way I have with this television show. And so it's been a fascinating experience.
Now, is this a daily show or a weekly show?
This is daily. It's being aired every day, right.
We've talked about successful parenting, but we haven't talked about school at all. And you've got a whole bunch of parents worried about, now, how can I have my kid be a success in school? Starting at the beginning, what about the preschool level? What can parents do at the preschool level to help prepare their children for a successful school experience?
Stay in there and not get shoved out. I think our school system has suffered terribly. One of my friends says it was the new math. Because when it came home, it said to parents, not only do you not understand this, but stay out of your kids' schooling. And that was the biggest tragedy for our present school system. And I think it gets even harder in infant or toddler or kindergarten child care, because there's a given that we'd better face, which is gatekeeping, that every adult who cares about a small child is going to be in competition with every other adult. And so, of course, a teacher is going to be in competition with a parent, and a parent with the teacher, unless they bring it to the surface and talk about it regularly and share it. And one of the things that we've learned with our Touchpoints intervention that we're working on is that if you use the child's behavior as your common language, both parent and teacher can join together and feel like a team for that child. So I would say that was the thing that I would like to see happen the most.
One of the keys to education is biting the bullet and realizing that we need better ratios between children and teachers. To have 30 kids or 25 kids per class, it's very hard to individualize care or get the parents very involved. On the other hand, if you have 12 or 15 kids in a classroom, as is true in many private schools, and that's why parents who can afford it often elect private schools, the teachers can get to know the kids, they can tailor and individualize the care much more, work with the child's processing and learning style. Parents can become much more easily involved because the teacher knows the child, there's time to meet with the parents more, there's just more collaboration in the way Barry was saying. So more testing, more accountability won't do the trick. Is it realistic to have 15 kids per class in public schools? Everyone will say no. But then I say, well, let's forget about improving teacher training. Let's forget about more testing. Let's forget about summer classes, because we're just not going to be successful. So why throw good money after bad if we're not going to be successful? Unless we lower the ratio significantly and also provide one-on-one help for the kids who are having learning problems, who are not learning to read in kindergarten in the first grade, give them an hour and a half a day using the best current methods, which do work. Unless we do those two things, smaller classes and one-on-one help for the kids who are not learning, we're not going to succeed in reversing the dilemma we have in American education. And other solutions just simply won't work. So if we're not going to do the right thing or try to do the right thing, at least don't fool ourselves. If we say we're not committed enough, we can't afford it, we need too much money for other things, okay, that could be the public decision. But don't fool yourselves into doing a partial solution that just 50 years later we won't be in any better shape.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our talk about what every child needs.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan, authors of The Irreducible Needs of Children, about what every child needs.
I want to quote from the book, which says, "The glue that makes minds grow is the glue of human interaction." Do you want to talk about the difference between a child learning from a teacher or a parent and a child learning from a computer?
Oh, yeah.
That's a biggie.
An easy one.
We did an interesting experiment. We took a bunch of bright school-age kids, and we had them play a computer game with each other as a way of occupying themselves. And there was very little emotional interchange between the kids. They talked a little bit. There was some signaling. We then had the kids just play cards and do some board games with each other. And all of a sudden, it was like Barry Brazelton playing with a baby. They were affect. They were exchanging gestures with each other. They were giggling and laughing. And they came alive. It was just a totally different learning experience. And if you believe in anything about nonverbal communication, the importance of affect cueing in learning, you would have no question you'd shut down those computer screens and get the kids interacting with each other and with parents. And the key here is that kids need affect. They need emotional interaction to learn. And that can't come from a computer. It's only a one-way. And that's why artificial intelligence will never be human intelligence, because to get high-level abstract thinking, you have to use your emotions. In other words, your emotions serve as a kind of architect for your higher-level thinking capacities. They tell you what to think, what to make of what other people think. And you can't have subtle judgments without your affect being involved, and that comes from human interaction, not from computer games.
There is one caveat to that, and that is that learning disabled children really need something as objective or depersonalized as a computer, and they learn more rapidly in front of it. But these are kids that are trying to tell you something. I'm so easily overloaded. And when I have a human interaction, I can't get divorced from watching that person's face or hearing the voice in order to learn myself. So they're trying to tell you something, and I would look for that. The Academy of Pediatrics has said no child should have a computer or a television in their room where they sleep.
Is my son listening to this?
Well, I think it's because we're all scared, but I would go beyond that. I think that a computer experience, it's so exciting that it draws you in and you can't really pull yourself out of it to go out and play or to have the freedom of a peer interaction, is also a seduction for overeating, for being overwhelmed, not really judging your own internal capacities. And I think there are a lot of negatives that we've ignored as we've gotten into this media world that we're in right now. And if we really want to protect our children, I think we better pay attention to them. It's one reason we came to the fact that you can have half hour a day in front of a computer for a child under 3, I think it was, and an hour up to about 6 or 7, but more than that is asking more of the child than you can really expect.
I just wanted to pick up on a point that Barry made about the children with some learning disabilities or processing problems. The computer can be a very big help in terms of some of the excellent educational programs for some of the kids. But we find even the children with the learning disabilities require more human interaction, but they require, in the way that Barry has described in many of his research studies, it has to be tailored to their processing profile. So if they're easily overwhelmed, the person working with them can't be a demanding, eager beaver, has to be a very calm, soothing person. And that one-on-one work can be the ticket to some of the kids, for example, with dyslexia, learning how to read. And sometimes a combination of some of the technologies that can help with a lot of human interaction. But if we do too much technology-based learning with the children with severe processing problems, they become more self-absorbed and more withdrawn, and they don't learn that signal reading, which is so important to them. So we have to balance it. We can tailor even to the kids who get overwhelmed and overloaded, but we have to tailor how we operate with them.
Well, we're delighted to have had the privilege of talking with these two distinguished physicians, Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks for having us, and we appreciate having the chance to talk with you.
Thanks. Oh, it's wonderful to be here with you two, because I admire what you're doing, and it's just been lots of fun.
Thank you. Our gift for our first caller is a copy of Dr. Brazelton and Dr. Greenspan's new book, The Irreducible Needs of Children: What Every Child Must Have to Grow, Learn, and Flourish. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-332-7200. 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. And let us know what station you're listening to. We're all over the world now, so we're always happy to know where our listeners are listening. We'd like to send you a copy of this special book. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or call our toll-free number 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's a shortcut address, and it's complete as http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.